Welcome to a new episode of Esports Boom, your weekly esports business podcast. My name is Maurice Eisenman, and joined this week once again by a member of a different type of esports community. So I've had a lot of our guests reach out to me, a lot of our audience reach out to me, asking if we could bring on more guests from the grassroots esports side and the startup side of the esports space. So it's not too often that you find a combination of both. So happy to have as a guest this week Josh Hafkin, a coach and a CEO at Game Gym. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be on the pod today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see, and we'll talk more about what Game Gym is later on. But it's just really cool to see this finally come together. I mean, I remember talking to you before about when you were at your previous job, about that you had ideas. So it's really cool to see you taking that leap of faith and building something beautiful.
Thank you. It's definitely been a long process, and so it's a little surreal that it's here now.
And for our audience, we usually record a podcast in person, but made an exception for Josh this week because Game Gym is launching relatively soon, and he wouldn't be in the city most likely anytime before. So as usual, the first half of the podcast will be us going through kind of the bigger stories this week from a business perspective. And then the second half of the podcast will be us focusing on Josh's story and more specifically Game Gym. So let's get right into it. The first story is one of kind of two. It has to do with Tencent, which the audience knows is probably one of my favorite companies into the space. And Tencent is planning to invest about $470 million in PUBG Studio Bluehole. Because of that, they'll have a 10% share in Bluehole, and they currently have a minority share of 1.5%. This will make it the second biggest shareholder after co-founder Shang Byung-ju, who has a 20.4% stake. So Josh, you know, right off the bat, you know, what are your initial thoughts on this story?
I mean, it makes sense to me. PUBG, you know, Battle Royale is wildly entertaining. It's, you know, it's cooperative. It's, you know, easy to watch. There's so many things that make it, you know, really, really advertising. So, I mean, to me, it makes sense that it's only going to get bigger. And with investments like this, it's only going to expand and grow from here.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for the audience who doesn't know, and I think I've said this 100 times, but Tencent owns pretty much everyone in the gaming industry. They own part of any company that's worth something. We'll talk more in the second story about the real scope of their business, but just when it comes to Battle Royale, so they own 40% of Epic Games, which is the developer of Fortnite. So it's really cool or really interesting that they now own, you know, a significant stake in both the studio that produces Fortnite and the studio that produces PUBG. And that's obviously very, very, very interesting. So Josh, you know, from a spectator perspective, from a coach perspective, or an esports perspective in general, you know, what are your thoughts on Battle Royale?
It's interesting. You know, I find it's wildly entertaining, and the universality of it is, you know, a huge asset. You know, anybody tunes in and you kind of understand, kind of, you know, you're watching one person and also, you know, explaining it to somebody who doesn't understand games. If you just say the Hunger Games, and you say you throw a bunch of people into a map and the last person surviving wins, like, people generally have like an understanding of that. I as an esport, I worry and I'm interested to see how they deal with the the, you know, random, you know, ness of the weapons and everything. It would be very hard to be unified, but at the end of the day, I think that the cream will rise to the top. So, you know, even the best player, you know, armed with a pistol is still probably better than the best guy with an AK. So, it's going to be interesting.
And that's really interesting. Just, you know, to end the story kind of on a note for the audience to kind of look on in the future. So Epic Games is, like I said, is partially owned by Tencent. And that is the game that is coming to China relatively soon. Tencent has made a significant or is going to make a significant investment in Fortnite esports. So it will be very interesting to see what will happen to PUBG right now, because PUBG is a massive success in China. So will it be the same as in the US, where we'll see Fortnite take it over, or will PUBG stay dominant? That remains to be seen. But let's move on to our next story. So Tencent once again now invests in VSPN, also known as Versus Programming Network, China's largest esports tournament operator and production company. They have signed a strategic partnership to further lay the groundwork for China's esports ecosystem. So they develop leagues, including Honor of Kings, PlayerUnknown's Battleground, as we just mentioned, Clash Royale, League of Legends, Crossfire, FIFA Online 3. The company claims, which don't think is that true, that they have a demographic reach of 280 million. So it'll be very interesting. Yeah, you know, with Chinese numbers, they're always a little bit exaggerated. But what is really cool is that the KPL, which is organized by Tencent, recently adopted a franchise model similar to the League of Legends Pro League. In which teams are specifically based on location in China. So that'll be very, very interesting. They own two of the venues, one in Shanghai and one in Chengdu, which the first season all teams play out of. So once again, Tencent acquires a large company. So Josh, you know, what do you think of this acquisition? Are you a fan?
So there's two parts of me at play here. As the businessman, it's brilliant. You know, you own the product, and now you own the vehicle in which to get the product to the people. Mm-hmm. As a fan, it worries me because it seems like it might be a little bit too much power in one place. And I don't know what it's going to look like, but essentially, whatever they decide, you know, they own the vehicle and the product, so they can do whatever they want with it. That has its own issues.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because Tencent is uniquely situated in that it owns the full esports cycle. It owns publishers. It fully owns Riot Games. It owns stake in PUBG Corp, Epic Games, Activision Blizzard. It owns the streaming platforms. It owns DouYuTV, if I'm correct, which is China's largest video gaming streaming platform, the Twitch of China. And now it also owns a tournament organizer. So it can fully own the full esports circle by itself. And as you mentioned, that is kind of scary, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it could be, you know, and part of it is, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future, because, you know, having all of that power in one place as esports is kind of trying to form itself in a number of ways could be very valuable, or it could, you know, hold it back in some ways, and you know, only time will tell. And it might be a little bit of both as well.
Absolutely. What I do think it's cool to see that that this tournament organizer is experimenting with the geolocated franchising models. So I usually have this discussion with a lot of people. I don't think I've ever had it with you.
Yeah.
What do you think about geo-specific leagues? I think about the OWL and stuff like that
in
esports. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great. You know, I think that you can have teams that are, you know, kind of global teams, and then you can also have kind of these geolocated teams. And I think that there's a space in esports for both of them, because not everybody is going to be able to, you know, put together something and you know, claim a city in the way that, you know, games like Overwatch and League of Legends and other ones can. I think it's great as a local guy. Like, I want to root for my local teams. And I'm a guy who, you know, I root for the Washington Wizards and the Capitals and my home team. And you know, I root for Wizards District Gaming and you know, all these other, you know, so if we had a you know, more Washington League of Legends teams or whatever the team was, I think that there would be fans. I think the other thing is that, you know, when you're in the community and you can meet people and go to meet and greets and develop those relationships, that's when you really, you know, gain roots. And I think that, you know, what esports needs is those opportunities where their, you know, stars can go out in the community and develop relationships and create moments for kids so that, you know, they could grow up idolizing these guys and you know, how many NBA players probably met an NBA player who told them to, like, you know, keep working hard and stay in school, and like that was super influential for them. So I think the same thing, you know, will need to happen for esports for it to, you know, continue its growth.
That's a very interesting perspective, and I very much agree with you on a lot of those points. So for our final story, it's our or at least our final Chinese story. Edward Gaming closed a $15.7 million round, co-led by a firm of former NBA Hall of Famer or current former NBA player, current Hall of Famer Yao Ming. So his company, Yao Capital, led this round. So for people who don't know, Edward Gaming plays in China's LPL and KPL, which is Honor of Kings League, and they have sponsorships with companies like Gillette and Intel. So I think this story for both of us is kind of out there. I think it's important to mention because it's I think one of the first big kind of private equity fundraising that we have seen in esports in China. So, you know, without going too much in specifics on this story, what are your thoughts on this story in general? And then secondly, to keep it more general, on venture capital entering the team space of esports?
So on the second part, I actually personally don't know too much about that. Mm-hmm. It's not been something that I have, obviously people are getting investments and things like that, but how and what, I've not paid too much attention to, so I can't really speak to that. I can speak that, you know, the more money that flows in through various avenues is going to create more opportunities. So if there's more opportunities for people to raise money, then there's going to be more opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a good thing in general. I also think that, you know, this makes a lot of sense. You have Yao Ming, who's a very smart person, who spent his time in the NBA, which is a very smart league. And you see the NBA making a ton of investments in esports, and Yao Ming, you know, being essentially one of the most recognizable figures in the world, has the ability to bring esports to China and, you know, with his face, add some validity, or not validity, but some star power to it. So I think it's a smart investment by him. I think it's, you know, very, very smart. If you look at the NBA and you know, the money is, I mean, it's a lot of money. So they're doing something right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I like the fact that it's not necessarily, you know, Yao Ming, the basketball player, investing into a team. It's his private equity firm investing into it. So obviously, there are strategic partners that go beyond Yao Ming, and obviously Yao Ming can bring his knowledge and his brand to the table, but this firm has investments in multiple companies. And I'm sure there's some cross-pollination with those companies as well.
Very smart.
Yeah. So for our last two stories, we go back to the States. So Engine Shop acquired SA Studios Global Esports and Soccer Division. So SA Studios, Engine Shop, for those of you who don't know, they recently acquired the Gamer Agency, which is a New York-based agency focused on gaming and esports. Their biggest client is Mixer Studios here in New York City. They handle all of their events. And Engine Shop, which is backed by a lot of traditional sports people, said that they wanted to be more active in esports. So now they acquired SA Studios. So for people who don't know, SA Studios is one of the agencies of Major League Soccer. And they also, they were the lead agency for the EMLS Cup. What are your initial thoughts on this, Josh?
It makes sense. A lot of, it's just like the NBA and the NBA 2K League. You got people who know soccer and you got people who know esports, and they're coming together to, your traditional sports and esports, and they're coming together to, put those, both of those, smart brains together to produce something great. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Very smart. No, you're good.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see this develop because it'll be interesting to see how Engine Shop becomes more of a player in esports. Because they acquired Gamer Agency. So with that, they get a lot of intellectual capital. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting to see with SA Studios now how they take the next step. So for all of our agency people listening to the podcast, definitely be on the lookout for this story, because as of now there aren't that many agencies that really know the space.
That's very true.
And for our final story, which is really not a big story, it is a big story, but it's not really an in-depth story. So Thanos from Avengers fame is coming to Fortnite for an epic Avengers Infinity War crossover. So Thanos, there's a special new mode in the game where for a limited time, where if you do certain things correctly, your avatar will transform into Thanos, and with that you get really epic power. But this is really cool because we're seeing a game like Fortnite really take a unique approach to marketing, in this case marketing for a movie, Avengers Infinity War. So Josh, what are your thoughts on this? I know we touched on Battle Royale before in general, but I think this is slightly different.
Yeah, to me, this is more the marketing. It's marketing and dev working really hand in hand. I think that there's a lot of times that dev wants to do something and marketing, for some reason can't, or vice versa. And it seems like this was an opportunity where, they were able to come together and produce something pretty amazing. And we've seen some of this with like Rocket League, having like the Batman car for Justice League, and some of these things have, happened in the past, but having a playable character in Fortnite, I think is pretty, pretty impressive. I think it also, it's great marketing. Fortnite is being used, for pop culture with Drake and the Avengers in ways that other games are not and have not. So I think we're going to see a lot more cross-platform promotions that you'll see between, movies and TV and music. You see, music is kind of incorporated, but it's not as in your face as, a character or some of these other things.
Yeah. You touched on a really interesting point there. You mentioned the mainstreamification of Fortnite. And I really think that this marketing campaign shows two things. One, it shows that developers are willing to to do out of the box things and really utilize their game for marketing. But secondly, it shows that kind of high level marketers all around the world, all around the country, are really looking at gaming and Fortnite specific as this is a really interesting place for us to pour some marketing dollars in.
Yep. I mean, it is interesting because I'm sure it was expensive too. You know, not everybody has Avengers money. So, you know, you're putting a big promotion in the biggest game in the world that's streamed the most on Twitch. You know, that's a pretty penny to develop that, promote it, and all of that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if other people are able to figure it out in a more affordable way that can get some of the same buzz.
Absolutely. And I'm really excited just to see how stuff like this evolves, like how we're going to see, you know, awesome, you know, marketing activations that are actually add value to the gameplay in the future.
Yeah.
So enough about news of the week. Let's talk about you and let's talk about Game Gym. So before we go into Game Gym, talk about your esports story. What led you to start this business? You know, what happened before?
Sure. So the first, you know, I would say 24 years, I'm 30 now. The first 24 years of my life were spent swimming. And I competed and trained and I learned, you know, the traditional sports world, and along with swimming, I played basketball and soccer and every other you know, sport growing up. And I gamed a little bit. I had a Game Boy and a Game Gear, and I loved them. And you know, the mobile aspect of my Game Boy was amazing because, you know, I could take it anywhere. I could car trips. And I remember, you know, some of those first games, you know, completing Pokemon for the first time, or Zelda, my Game Boy, and the feeling that I had. So games were always there for me, but it was never like a big part of my life. And then I went to college, and games became, you know, an outlet. And we would all get together after practice and play. And that was the first time that I really kind of saw that games could be a spectator sport. And not, you know, obviously that was how, you know, you play, but we would fit 20, 30 people into a room and really, really, you know, treat it as a spectator sport. And that was the first time that I really got, you know, kind of understood what this all could be. And then post swimming, graduated from college, tried to figure out what I wanted to do, and I tried to go into traditional sports. I got my master's at Georgetown in sports marketing, applied for jobs for the Wizards, the Capitals, the Redskins, all the sports teams, and didn't find anything that really clicked. I did a number of different odd jobs before I found myself at a marketing agency. And we were running Geico's experiential marketing. And Geico was always looking for where the next big group of people were. So we ended up doing a lot of research into gaming and Comic-Cons and things like that. And that research fell to me. So all of a sudden, my job was going to esports events, reading about esports, learning about all this stuff, and I dove in. And now, like 5-6 years later, I've had a ton of different experiences. I've gotten to run events. I've done a number of different things that were everything from social media to marketing to brand. And then I got the opportunity to work for Bethesda Softworks, which was an incredible opportunity. It was and is one of the best companies in the world. It was just named 2017 Publisher of the Year. I got to work on Wolfenstein and Quake, which were incredible. And Bethesda really taught me to be myself and to, you know, go after your dreams and not really, you know, though other people might be doing things differently, we're going to do things this way because this is our way and this is right and this feels right. And Bethesda really inspired me to take the next step and start the Game Jam.
That's really awesome. And yeah, I think as our listeners can hear from your stories, like you've done a lot in this space. So, and especially, you know, moving from Bethesda to starting your own stuff, it must be, you know, you must be really passionate about it. So let's talk about Game Jam. Just tell us, you know, what is Game Jam?
Sure. So the Game Jam is a youth esports training center. And essentially what I'm doing is I'm taking what I learned from traditional sports and applying it to esports. And in addition to providing a place where kids can learn, how to play esports, the other thing is that we're going to provide this mentorship and coaching that is very present in traditional sports. You know, so many kids grow up and their coach or their tutor or, you know, some kind of mentor is a very important part of their life. But if you're not playing soccer or you maybe are more into esports, those coaches aren't readily available in your community. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we've partnered with fantastic esports coaches who can coach a variety of different esports. And we're going to bring them together and play and learn and compete in a live setting. So there are other coaching platforms out there, but our program is based on getting out of the house and getting into the gym.
Yeah, so you actually have a physical location, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, now, where is that?
It's in Potomac, Maryland. It's about two miles from where I grew up. So I feel very proud that, you know, I'm doing it in my community and, it's a very popular shopping center outside in a suburb of Washington, D.C., where youth sports are very popular. The community is very smart, tech friendly, and it just seems like a very very good breeding ground for this kind of experiment.
Yeah, so you already hit right on the point, but like I think the biggest differentiator between you guys and other platforms that you have a physical location and you actually, you know, you're training them in person. And it's not only about training them to be better esports players, it's also about training them to become better men and women, I assume.
Absolutely. We want to hold people to a higher standard. So we want to teach people, and help kids navigate this new world. I think part of it is very hard to understand. If you're a little kid, you're given an Xbox or a PlayStation or a computer, and generally it doesn't come with an etiquette rule book. And so what our job our coaches are, we're going to teach the X's and O's of the game, but we're not going to shy away from, I feel as though we want to, you know, bring our kids to the gym where we can reinforce positive habits and, kind of try to negate any negative habits.
Yeah, I think, this can be something really awesome. What are the games that you guys are focusing on in the beginning, and is there any specific rhyme or reason for it?
So, part of it is that we're going to tailor it, and hopefully if we can expand, we're going to tailor every game gym to the community. So, in this community, we've got a fantastic League of Legends scene. We've got a wonderful and very strong Super Smash Bros. Scene. And there's a number of other scenes that are very strong. And each community will be different. So what we really want to do is we're going to be offering League of Legends, we're going to be offering Smash Brothers, we're going to be offering Overwatch. But I think the thing that makes us, very special is that this is your coaching. So you can get a private lesson in, Street Fighter, and you can get take a group lesson in League of Legends. A lot of kids who are in middle school, they don't even know what they're good at. So what we're going to try to do is present to them a number of different avenues to learn so that you might come into esports through League of Legends and then find Street Fighter, or you might come in through NBA 2K and then find Rocket League. You know, our job is to provide a number of avenues in which the kids can learn. And that's, you know, gaming and also outside of gaming, art and music, videography, streaming, tournament organizing. There's all these different gaming adjacent things that we will be able to feature in different ways, so that, you know, maybe you're not the best gamer, but maybe you're an incredible graphic designer or a tournament organizer. There's going to be a place for you in the gym, even if, you know, the gaming part of it is not necessarily your passion.
That's awesome. And just, you know, I know there's some parents listening, you know, parents are becoming more open to the idea of esports. The college scholarships help them a lot. But if you could, you know, talk to parents and what will you tell them about the added value of the game gym?
Sure. I think that you can learn the same things through competitive video gaming or esports that you can through traditional sports. So you sign your kid up to play soccer, and the idea is that you're not signing your kid up to be Messi. And I think that's the issue, is that parents think that they're signing their kid up to be a pro gamer. And that's not the case. We're going to provide a number of avenues. So if your kid is a great gamer, there's an avenue for that. If your kid wants to, you know, have a social situation and make some friends, there's an avenue for that. If it's the competition that they enjoy, there's an avenue for that. And we feel as though you can learn the same things that you learn in traditional sports, like how to communicate effectively, how to give and receive criticism, how to be a good winner, how to be a good loser. All of these different things can be learned through competitive video gaming. And it's our job as mentors as well to help those kids navigate that, because it's not always, you know, something that they know how to do right away. So we've surrounded, we're going to have a great program that's going to provide kids with an avenue to win, an avenue to learn, or to lose, and an avenue to learn. But it's going to be our coaching staff that really helps them kind of make sense of it all and where it all goes from there. The other thing is that we want parents involved. You know, I want parents to bring orange slices like it's, you know, youth soccer, and I want the parents to invest. I think that, you know, you could be one of two parents, and I think this they can relate to. You know, you could be a rock and roll parent, and you could say rock and roll is the worst. I don't like it. There's no rock and roll in this house. Or you could be a parent who says, well, play me something. What is it that you like about that rock and roll? Maybe can you take me to a show sometime so I can understand the, you know, what it is that you love about it? And then that thing that was a pain point now becomes a thing that you can bond over. And what we're looking for is parents who, you know, are going to look at this and not say, oh, video games are the devil, but say, okay, well, there is a benefit that we can get out of this. My kid is into it. How can we be positive, and how can we, you know, support what you're doing in the gym to provide a great experience for my kid? So that's kind of how I'm framing it for parents.
That's really awesome. And I hope that if there are any parents, you know, listening from the Maryland area, that they definitely, you know, take a look. So, you know, talking about the larger DMV area, I know you take pride, and you mentioned it before with the game gym, about your home area. And in our conversations before, you know, you talk very highly about the potential of this, of the DMV area when it comes to esports. So, you know, talking to the audience a little bit about that, like what makes you so excited about the future of esports in the DMV area?
Yeah. So part of it is the demographic. You know, it's a wealthy, educated, tech friendly demographic. We also have great infrastructure and sports passion here. So, you know, we have incredibly passionate fans of our teams and the Redskins and the Capitals and Wizards. And I also think that it's interesting because DC is a pretty transient city, and it's a global, international city. So I think esports being an international sport, unlike, you know, football, for example, provides it an avenue in which Washington, D.C. is very much like Vegas in the sense that there's a lot of people internationally who are coming in and out all the time. So there's the demographic that is huge. We also have a lot of, you know, power players in this area. You know, we have the Washington Post writing very favorable esports articles. We have the Leonsises and other big, powerful names who are investing in esports in this area. Wizards District Gaming is starting. And then the other side of that probably people don't know about is that there's probably 10, 20, 30 people who are like me who are starting our own something. And it's, they see a need and they're trying to fill it. And we're all... you know, kind of hungry and we all see the opportunity and we all have, you know, very cool dreams. And I'm very proud that we actually all get together every couple months or so and have a happy hour. And we've got a really wonderful network of people who are trying to make it in esports, working together and helping each other. That is like truly heartwarming. It's really like a wonderful thing to see.
That is really, really awesome. So Josh, if people want to know more about you, but more importantly, if people want to know more about the Game Gym, how can they do that?
Yeah. So our website is gamegym.com and we have a Facebook, which is the Game Gym, and an Instagram, which is the Game Gym. And if you just also, if there's anybody who just wants to talk youth esports or coaching in esports, that's another avenue. You know, I think that there's a lot that we can learn. And I think that information sharing, for some reason, does not happen in esports as much as it happens in other sports. The reason we know how to coach basketball is that we've coached basketball for, you know, 70, 100 years. And there's been a lot of coaches who have come together to collaborate to develop that curriculum so that we now know how to, you know, coach a layup or teach these different drills. That hasn't happened. Esports is super new, and also people very much hold everything to their chest. We're about collaborative coaching, and so we want to get better, and we want to work with different people to see, you know, what works for the kids, because at the end of the day, it's for the kids. So if anybody wants to talk, you know, coaching, esports, youth esports, I'm happy to chat about it all.
Awesome. And we'll put all the links in the description box of the podcast. So thank you very much for coming on, Josh.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Of course. And thank you very much for listening. This has been another episode of the Esports Boom Podcast. And we'll see you next week.